The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn. Thanks for joining us for episode 14, The Disappearance of Sarah Stern. Tonight, we're on the case in Neptune City, New Jersey, about 60 miles south of Manhattan. The small beach community became the setting for a disturbing mystery when 19-year-old Sarah Stern vanished on a cold winter night. The circumstances surrounding her disappearance forced her family to face troubling questions, but no one ever could have imagined how much more terrifying the answers would be. December 3rd, 2016. It was after 2:30 in the morning in the sleepy beach town of Neptune City, New Jersey, when a puzzling call came in to the 911 dispatch center.
911, where is the emergency?
Actually on the Belmar Bridge, there's a car that's abandoned. It's off to the side of the road.
Was there anybody inside the vehicle?
I looked, no.
Patrol officers arrived with their cameras rolling and inspected the car. Detective Brian Weisbrot.
The officers didn't know what happened to the people that were in the car.
The location where the car was found raised ominous possibilities.
The officers didn't know if somebody had potentially jumped over the bridge. They checked the land on top of the bridge and underneath the bridge. They also checked the waterway.
A search of the car revealed another crucial clue that helped focus the investigation. The keys were still inside.
It was unusual. The keys were left there. One of the questions was the car operational, and we were able to confirm that it was. The car started and was running.
The evidence seemed to eliminate the possibility that the car had broken down and the driver had gone for help. Authorities also considered that the driver could have been taken from the car by force.
The officers didn't know what they were facing at that point.
Police ran the car's license plate, and the situation darkened. The owner, Michael Stern, was on vacation in Florida when he received the call.
It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And got a call from the Monmouth County Sheriff's Department asking me about who drove the gray Oldsmobile. And I said, my daughter drives the car.
Michael was shocked when he was told that the car had been found abandoned on the bridge.
I first thought there was an accident. We didn't know what was going on.
Michael tried not to panic, hoping it was all just a misunderstanding.
I just thought that she wasn't far from the house. It was only maybe a mile or so. So she could have walked back.
But one detail the officer mentioned left Michael rattled. The keys had been found inside Sarah's car.
That was a little bit troubling, because that would have the keys to the house on it, too.
Still, Michael asked police to check his house to see if Sarah was inside.
After learning that she was the likely driver of the car, the officer's initial goal was to find Sarah.
Neptune City also located an open door at that premise, and they're checking the interior at this time.
What officers found only raised more concerns.
The lights were on and the house was not locked, and there was no indication of anyone being inside the house.
When investigators called Michael Stern with those details, he immediately began to panic. He knew Sarah would never have left the door open. And police mentioned another unusual clue. Sarah's dog had been locked up in his crate.
They found the dog, Buddy, in his little cage. And we didn't keep him in there. He was a friendly dog. And there was no reason for him to be locked in his cage. Something just wasn't right. Something happened.
And his fears escalated when Michael learned that none of Sarah's friends nor her grandmother had been able to reach her for almost 12 hours.
It just wasn't like Sarah. She would always be in contact with somebody. And now it's going into the next day and still no response on her phone.
Michael had a bad feeling and immediately jumped into action.
I just packed everything in the car and just left right around 3:30 and started heading north.
While Michael Stern raced back from Florida, his daughter's disappearance was officially declared a missing persons case. During the long drive home, police kept him updated.
It was nonstop on the phone, talking to the police and friends, relatives.
For Michael Stern, the 15-hour drive home from Florida was the longest ride of his life.
It's a horrible trip, to say the least.
Meanwhile, detectives spent hours distilling the disturbing details of what they knew so far. Every possible scenario was on the table.
Assistant prosecutor Chris Decker.
Well, there's a couple theories. The first theory is just based upon the circumstance, and that would be that she would have jumped off the Belmar Bridge.
Prosecutor Christopher Gramiglione.
When we open missing person cases, there's always an internal aspect of us assessing whether it could be a suicide.
So the question became early on, is she in the water? So the investigation kind of starts from there.
By the time Michael Stern arrived home, his unimaginable nightmare had gotten worse.
Dive teams in the water, in the inlet in Shark River, the state police were involved, Coast Guard was involved.
Michael was certain his daughter had not jumped from the bridge, but the only other scenario seemed just as grim.
Sarah's grandma, my mom, she was very distraught. She kept saying, somebody did something to Sarah.
Investigators were taking the possibility of foul play seriously as well. When they questioned Michael about his recent communication with Sarah, the shaken father explained that until the police called about Sarah's car, he had no reason to suspect anything was wrong. While he was away in Florida, he had spoken and exchanged texts with Sarah frequently.
She was fine.
In fact, he remembered her being in good spirits when he left for his trip to Florida.
I told her I was heading out and gave her a hug and kiss goodbye and said she loved me and I loved her.
Michael told detectives that he and his daughter had always been close, especially after his wife died from cancer.
Sarah's my only daughter, only child. And after her mother passed away, we had to be there for each other.
The death of her mother had been a devastating blow for Sarah.
I think she was kind of lost for a while.
Michael said that one of the ways Sarah managed to find her way out of her grief was through her love of art.
That's when her art developed. She threw herself into it. Their art flourished.
According to her father, Sarah's future was bright, and she was thriving.
Very happy. Excited, a typical teenager.
But others close to Sarah painted a different portrait. They described a melancholy teen, anxious to escape the confines of her hometown.
We spoke to neighbors and we spoke to Sarah's friends, and they had all talked about the fact that Sarah wanted to leave New Jersey and relocate to Canada.
In fact, her childhood friend Liam told police that he had spent the afternoon before she went missing helping Sarah pack.
Liam was an important witness for us because he was the last person that we knew that Sarah was with prior to her disappearance.
What kind of car did you know Sarah to drive?
She drove.
I couldn't tell you the model, but it's a beat-up old grandma's car.
Have you been in that car?
Yeah, I was actually in her car on Friday.
Earlier that same day, Liam said that he and Sarah had started to prepare for her move to Canada. He told investigators that he and Sarah had taken several boxes of her things to a neighbor's home. Liam McIntosny.
I've been friends with her since first grade, so we have a pretty good friendship.
Did you help her carry stuff?
Yeah, that's what.
What was it that you carried over to her?
We had one big gray container.
Okay.
And I actually have a few of these in my basement right now.
Of hers?
Of hers, yeah, if you guys want to go through those. She's just been trying to get stuff out of the house.
And the explanation Liam gave authorities about why Sarah wanted to leave her home stood in stark contrast to what her father had told them.
What's her reasoning for wanting to get the stuff out of her father's place? I know she definitely has a lot of trust issues with her dad.
The picture Liam painted of Sarah's relationship with her father was very different from what Michael Stern had told police.
What's your relationship like with her dad?
Not good.
When you say not good, what do you mean?
I can't say that anything's ever gotten violent, but I know that there's a lot of fighting all the time. Constant fighting between her and her father.
Liam told investigators that the situation had become unbearable.
He had said that Sarah had said that she wanted to get away from her father. He described her father as crazy.
The information Liam provided was a huge red flag to investigators. And images captured by a neighbor's security camera verified Liam's account of what he and Sarah had done on the day she went missing.
That video showed Liam arriving at Sarah's house that day. It showed Sarah and Liam walking out of Sarah's house and into their neighbor's house across the street.
Liam told police that after moving the boxes, he and Sarah went to get a bite to eat before he went to work.
They had gone to the Taco Bell together.
Once again, investigators found video that backed up his story.
There's video which confirms they were there at about 2:00 in the afternoon.
Assistant Prosecutor Megan J. Doyle.
Everything as far as what their activities were for that day were confirmed through this surveillance.
Liam's version of events left authorities to wonder if Sarah might have been secretly planning to leave town while her father was away. But when detectives searched the Stern home, they found evidence that seemed to indicate that Sarah had not run away to Canada.
We found her Social Security card, her passport, United States currency, and Canadian currency inside her bedroom.
It seemed impossible that Sarah had fled the country without those things.
She would have taken her passport. She would have taken her money. And she didn't.
The mystery of what really happened to Sarah Stern only deepened when police got a call from the local bank about the teenager. Sarah was a lifelong customer, and tellers remembered that she had been there on the afternoon she went missing.
Assistant prosecutor Chris Decker.
She went to the Kearney Bank. We have video from the Kearney Bank. We have her signing in and opening up and accessing her safety deposit box.
The bank wasn't able to provide investigators with information about whether Sarah had placed items in the box or if she removed anything.
The only thing they were able to confirm is that Sarah accessed her safety deposit box. The video also shows Sarah leaving the bank.
Detectives obtained a search warrant and checked Sarah's safety deposit box. They were stunned to find that it was filled with cash.
$25,250.
It was a staggering sum for a 19-year-old. But the cash was old and worn. Some of the bills were actually disintegrating. The discovery of the money led investigators to a chilling conclusion.
Sarah did not leave voluntarily.
On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment.
Now that the holidays are over, you might be feeling like you have a spending hangover. I know I do. All the travel and gifts really add up. Luckily, Mint Mobile can help you cut back on overspending on wireless this January with 50% off of unlimited premium wireless. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Quit overspending on wireless with 50% off unlimited premium wireless. Plans start at $15 a month at mintmobile.com/OTCpod. That's mintmobile.com/OTCpod. Limited time offer. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, and $180 for 12 months. Plan required. $15 a month equivalent. Taxes and fees extra. Initial plan term only. Over 50 gigabytes may slow when network is busy. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See Mint Mobile.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
.com. If Sarah hadn't left on her own, that left only two other options. The 19-year-old was either the victim of foul play or she had taken her own life.
You're hearing things like, you know, her mom died and she was upset and she didn't have a good relationship with her dad. You're hearing things like she was suicidal. When you put all these things together, coupled with the fact that the car is found on the bridge, like, it's hard to, you know, walk away from that assumption.
As police continue to pore over the video from Sarah's neighbor's surveillance camera, they discovered the next important clue. The teenager had left her home close to midnight.
The video camera shows Sarah's car ultimately backing out of her driveway and leaving the area.
Just a few hours later, Sarah's car would be found abandoned on the bridge.
Assistant prosecutor Megan J. Doyle.
What did she do or what happened at around 11:45 that night to make her want to leave her house suddenly?
It was one of many questions police were still struggling with. Did that late night trip to the bridge have anything to do with her visit to the bank earlier that day?
Our speculation is that she went to get money out that day, but that's the only thing that really makes sense. But there was about $25,000 left, so we didn't know.
Police also didn't know where the $25,000 in cash that was found in her safe deposit box had come from. Investigators quietly spoke with everyone close to Sarah, looking for that piece of the puzzle. And an answer quickly came into focus.
We were told from a couple people, it was September of 2016, she comes across what's been described as a box that contained a large amount of money in her parents' second house.
Sarah's mom, who had passed several years prior, had been saving this money, and Sarah had found it.
We were told her mother left there for her to find.
Sarah's father had little to add to the story police had heard. It appeared Sarah had not told him anything about her discovery, nor had he known that his wife had a large amount of money hidden away.
In talking to Sarah's dad, he had always heard through the family that his wife had saved money, but he didn't know where it was or how much it was.
Authorities wondered why Sarah had not told her father about the money, but had mentioned it to other members of her family and friends.
She told her aunt in Florida about the money. Her friend Liam knew about the money.
And Liam also gave police another crucial detail.
Liam McCatsney.
I know that when her mom died, she had money that was supposed to go to her, and her dad took that from her. It's kind of been the big thing over the years that she's always said the dad took money from her.
And it appeared Sarah wasn't going to let that happen again. Police were even more intrigued when they asked those closest to Sarah how much money the teenager had found in her parents' home.
Based upon my understanding of what she's told family members and friends, we were hearing from $50,000 to $100,000.
If the rumors were true, that meant there could be as much as $75,000 in cash still unaccounted for. Could the missing money have played a role in Sarah's disappearance? Meanwhile, police also followed up on the late-night video that showed Sarah's car pulling out of her driveway.
We suspected that it was Sarah, although we couldn't see her. It was dark. There was limited lighting.
But the biggest allocation of resources was focused on a search of the Shark River. The powerful currents ran under the bridge where Sarah's car had been found and out into the Atlantic Ocean.
They were actively searching the waterways underneath the bridge out into the Atlantic Ocean, looking for Sarah's remains.
As the search continued with no luck, police pressed the teenager's friends about anything they might be holding back. Preston Taylor, Sarah's prom date, eventually told police that she struggled with bouts of depression.
I don't know if you guys already know, sometime within the past year or two, apparently she committed suicide towards.
Detectives were troubled by the conflicting reports they were getting about Sarah. Her father continued to maintain that there was no way his daughter had taken her own life.
Sarah's father, Michael Stern.
Her mood and her demeanor weren't anything like that. And she had plans to do things around the holidays with her aunts that were coming up from Florida and cousins.
But as the weeks passed with no sign of the missing teen, most began to accept the painful reality that Sarah Stern was not coming home.
It was tragic. Neptune City is a very small town. Everyone knows one another, and it ripped the community apart.
Hope became desperation. She had just vanished. Where do you look next?
But just when it seemed the mystery would torment Michael Stern forever, police got a call from an unlikely source. A retired police officer in nearby Bradley Beach had a lead for investigators. And he contacted Detective Mike Bonanno, his former colleague, to explain the sensitivity.
He contacted me for some advice. He was concerned because his son believed he had information on the Sarah Stern disappearance.
The friend told Detective Bonanno that his son feared what might happen if he shared his account with police.
He was concerned to come forward because of the safety of his family as well as his own safety.
The teenager ultimately agreed to come to the police station to tell his chilling story. The room was silent as 19-year-old Anthony Curry explained why he feared that Sarah Stern had been murdered.
Anthony Curry had a conversation with a friend approximately a week before Sarah went missing. And this person had told him that he was going to kill Sarah Stern.
Detectives were stunned.
We now have an individual coming forward saying that there was a plan in place. It was certainly shocking. We knew that we needed to act immediately and try to corroborate the information that he was providing to us.
Anthony then took police through the killer's cold-blooded plan. It had been revealed during a drunken conversation over Thanksgiving weekend, weeks before the crime.
Assistant Prosecutor Megan J. Doyle.
The friend indicated that he was going to murder somebody they knew, make it look like a suicide.
Anthony was telling us about a plan to rob Sarah, strangle her, and throw her over the bridge. It was very alarming.
At the time, the 19-year-old saw no need to contact police. Anthony and his friend were intoxicated, and he thought the whole thing was a joke.
Anthony didn't think it was for real. He didn't think that this was really going to happen.
It was such a brief conversation. They'd been drinking, and he said at the end, wouldn't it make a great movie? So Anthony dismissed it.
Anthony Curry may have dismissed it at the time, but newspaper reports about a shockingly similar series of events brought the conversation rushing back in terrifying detail.
All of a sudden, Sarah Stern is missing. Her car is found on a bridge, and police are investigating. I think it's at that point where the obvious light goes off in your head, like, oh, wow, he told me he was going to kill her. He told me he was going to throw her into that very body of water.
Just when it seemed Anthony Curry's story couldn't get any more frightening, he shared a final stunning detail, the identity of who he said killed Sarah. It was a name that was very familiar to police.
Anthony Curry's friend was Liam McAtasney.
Liam McAtasney, Sarah's close friend since childhood. The same young man who seemed concerned that she might have run away or even killed herself.
I'm one of her closest friends, and I have no idea why she wouldn't tell me anything before she left. Like, the last time I say goodbye to her, it was just like any other day. Like, see you later, I gotta go to work.
That's the disturbing part of all this. The whole thing was a complete ruse. It was a cover.
One that seemed designed to redirect the investigation and send police down several time-wasting rabbit holes.
I just remember hearing Sarah say, this might be the last time I see you because I might be in Canada. Something along those lines.
Detectives were amazed, but they quickly realized that Anthony Curry now held the key to bringing Liam McItasney to justice. And investigators came up with a bold plan to try to catch him.
We were going to ask Anthony if he'd be willing to allow law enforcement to monitor and record his communication with Liam.
Anthony agreed to help police. The first step was to create a reason for the two to meet and talk.
The initial text messages and Snapchats were relatively benign. Anthony ultimately on the telephone asks him if he can borrow money.
How much do you need?
I need like two. I mean, I would pay you back.
Liam was careful to avoid saying or writing anything incriminating. But one message advanced the case against Liam McItasney. He told Anthony that the only money he had was old and falling apart. Police were convinced he was describing the cash Sarah had found in her mother's house. But Anthony was not able to get Liam to confirm that the crumbly cash was stolen from Sarah.
Like, do you have, like, anything left from it or no?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really
want
to talk about it right now.
All right.
Yeah, we need to talk. Come see me in person sometime.
Investigators saw Liam's request for an in-person meeting as a huge opportunity. They knew Liam would feel safer talking with his friend face-to-face.
There was a brief conversation on the phone regarding this meeting for money. And then there were a couple of Snapchat messages about where they were going to meet and what time they were going to meet.
Anthony Curry was terrified about the role police were asking him to play in the sting operation.
He was concerned, and rightfully so, because he is the absolute only person that knows about this homicide.
And despite the risk, Anthony Curry volunteered to make it happen. It removed any doubts police had about Anthony's motivation.
He agrees to do the ultimate test of his credibility. He agrees to be wired up.
I know it was a very difficult thing for him to do, and yet he did it because he wanted to do the right thing. It's brave of him.
We are back on the case after this.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Curry family friend, Detective Mike Bonanno, personally planned the entire sting operation. Detective Michael Bonanno.
First and foremost, our goals were Anthony's safety. We obviously wanted a location that we could do surveillance easily. I spoke to Anthony. We got some ideas where he's met Liam in the past, so that way we would let handpick a location that they're both familiar with already.
Anthony's car was rigged with a hidden camera, and detectives also equipped him with a hidden recording device. Undercover police were positioned along the entire street.
We had surveillance units set up, approximately 15 vehicles, for his safety because we didn't know how it was going to play out.
Detectives Bonanno and Weisbrot were just steps away, watching and listening.
And we were parked directly across the street, maintaining a constant eye on him.
The tension was thick when Liam's car pulled into the spot next to Anthony's.
We didn't want him getting to Liam's car because we couldn't control what Liam did once Anthony got in his car. But if Liam got in Anthony's car, we know that that car is not going anywhere. So that was the ideal situation.
Police were incredibly relieved when Liam quickly got into Anthony's car.
How you doing? What you been up to?
Hiding from the cops.
But their relief didn't last long. The whole sting operation appeared to be in jeopardy when Liam began to frisk his good friend Anthony. Liam McIntosny.
Dude, you can't blame me for doing this, right? I gotta feel you up real quick, all right? No disrespect.
I'll show you.
No disrespect, okay?
Nothing.
The second Liam got in Anthony's car, Liam immediately patted him down. And right there and then, things got very real. It was chilling.
It was the worst possible scenario. If Liam discovered the wire on his friend, the sting would go south, and Anthony's safety would be compromised. But Liam never discovered the hidden wire. And after that mistake, he began to openly discuss his role in the brutal murder of Sarah Stern.
Yeah, I got the FBI on my ass, dude.
What are they questioning?
Oh, yeah, a lot.
About what?
About killing Sarah. First, it was just normal police. They were on my ass, and I had to go in and get interrogated by them multiple times, but then it kept moving up levels, and now it's a federal case. We've got the FBI.
So you've been laying low, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Officers stationed a block away listened to the conversation in stunned silence. Detective Brian Weisbrot.
We were shocked. It was extremely disturbing.
Liam claimed that the attack began shortly after he and Sarah returned from their trip to the bank.
I'm hanging out with her. We went to the bank. She took some money out, not all of her money. We're counting it out, and then she goes to walk out the front door. I choke her out, drag her. I pretty much hung her, like, I picked her up and had her just like dangling off the ground. My biggest problem was the dog, and her dog laid there and watched as I killed her. Didn't do anything. What kind of dog is that?
Liam then went, step by step, through the final terrifying moments of Sarah's life in graphic detail.
I got a shirt and I just shoved it down her throat and held my finger over her nose and set a timer. And it took me like a half an hour after I hit start on the timer. There's so much that you can't account for.
He even mentioned Sarah's final words.
Said my name and then that was it. I thought I was going to be able to choke her out and have her out in like a couple minutes.
Sarah's best friend never expressed the slightest bit of remorse over what he had done.
No emotion whatsoever. No care, no concern. I was nauseated.
Liam told Anthony his motive as well. He called it a heist, He claimed that he killed Sarah for the money she had found, even expressing disappointment in the amount he eventually got.
The worst part of it is I thought I was walking out 50 grand, 100 grand in my pocket, and she only had 10 grand. It's old money, terrible quality. I don't even know if I can put any of it in the bank.
Liam took the money and left Sarah's house for work at 4:40 p.m. And the stunning confession wasn't over yet. Liam then admitted that he hadn't committed the murder alone. His roommate, Preston Taylor, Sarah's junior prom date, was an accomplice in the crime.
I drag her into the back, put her in a bathroom, and then I had to go straight to work. So Preston came over, took the body, put it in the bushes.
Up until that point, we had no idea that Preston was even involved. My first thought was, he's going to be the first person that we're going to go speak to.
Both Liam and Preston were aware of the surveillance camera at Sarah's neighbor's house, and they made certain to avoid it during the rest of the crime.
The only thing we were able to see is there was a person back there walking around.
When Liam got off of work, he met Preston at the crime scene to dispose of Sarah's body. They planned to make it look like Sarah had driven to the bridge and killed herself. But it was actually Liam behind the wheel as Sarah's car backed up the street.
I put her in the passenger seat of her own car. So I was driving, and I had her buckled in.
Preston followed Liam to the bridge in his own car, where he helped throw Sarah's lifeless body into the Shark River.
The two of us throw the body over, and then we're out.
Oh, so you needed help?
I needed help, yeah. Yeah. We threw off the bridge, and the body never showed up.
It's probably frozen.
It's probably all the way out in the ocean.
Liam also explained how he threw police off his trail.
Sarah's whole deal was my thing. I had planned Sarah's situation for me to be interrogated by cops. Like, that was whole part of my plan, to make me look not guilty.
Liam finally ended the conversation with an ominous threat to Anthony.
I don't want Preston to think that he has to kill you and take you out because you are the only person that knows.
Anthony Curry was shell-shocked.
I don't know how anyone could listen to those details and not be shaken up.
On the surface, the sting operation gave investigators enough to arrest Liam McIntosny for Sarah's murder. But there was one huge problem. Police still had no proof that Sarah was dead. Her body had never been found.
At that point, we wanted to see whether or not we could take it further and corroborate the information further. So what we did was immediately establish surveillance, 24-hour surveillance on Preston and on Liam. And the following morning, we ultimately stopped Preston's car while he was en route to school.
When detectives brought Preston Taylor into the interrogation room, they assumed he would do whatever he could to avoid turning on his best friend Liam. But they were wrong.
We want to know why Liam did what he did.
What did he do?
He killed Sarah.
Okay.
Okay? And we know you know that. Right? You know that. Correct?
Yes, correct.
You got to lay it out for us as to why it happened, right? And why he did what he did.
Money.
Assistant Prosecutor Chris Decker.
I've never seen someone confess that quickly, to be honest with you.
Preston's story matched Liam's videotape confession in all of its horrifying details. And he agreed to walk detectives through his role in the crime step by step.
How was Sarah's body positioned in this bathroom?
Sarah was slumped in this corner right here, behind this door.
And then I carried her over here, dragged her over here and kind of sat her under the bushes right here.
Preston and detectives went to the Belmar Bridge, where he demonstrated exactly how he and Liam had thrown Sarah's body into the river below.
Liam had her by the shoulders and hoisted her up onto the railing, and then I pushed her feet over so that she was going over the rest of the way.
Preston then led detectives to the area where they buried the money they had stolen from Sarah. It was in a safe in nearby Sandy Hook.
We were able to dig up that safe, and we recovered over $9,000 of the same deteriorated, very brittle currency that belonged to Sarah.
That evidence was the final piece of the puzzle. Liam McItasney was arrested and charged with Sarah's murder. The fatal flaw in his carefully orchestrated plan had been exposed.
He did not count on the fact that Anthony Curry would do the right thing.
Although Liam refused to cooperate with investigators, he was carrying further proof of his guilt.
The safe that we recovered was accessed by a key that was on Liam's keychain at the time of his arrest.
The news of the arrests of Liam McItasney and Preston Taylor was almost incomprehensible for Sarah's father, Michael Stern.
I was just in shock. I have no idea how long I stared without saying a word. I went numb. I couldn't believe it. These were her friends from grammar school and high school. It just, disbelief.
In April of 2017, Preston Taylor pled guilty to lesser charges. He was sentenced to 18 years behind bars.
He got caught. And when you get caught and you decide to be truthful, you're saving yourself. So he is the only person who could have stopped this from happening, and he didn't.
As part of his plea deal, he agreed to testify against his good friend, Liam McItasney. Despite all the evidence police had compiled, the Monmouth County Prosecutor's Office still knew the case wouldn't be easy.
Prosecutor Christopher Gramiccioni.
Well, by far the biggest challenge is we were never able to recover Sarah's remains.
But prosecutors believe the evidence and the testimony of their star witness would make the hurdle an easy one for jurors to get over.
Assistant Prosecutor Megan J. Doyle.
Not having a body in this case was not reasonable doubt. It made him more guilty because that was part of his plan. We didn't have a body because he destroyed it.
Ocean engineer Hugh Rorty explained why there was no chance of ever finding Sarah's body.
Based on the water level and the tides of that evening, I made an estimate as to how quickly she would have floated out. She would have been about 7 miles offshore in 24 hours.
And once Sarah's body reached the ocean, it was likely gone forever. But the most powerful evidence the jury heard was the recording of Liam confessing during the sting operation.
I planned this thing out for like 6 months.
Sarah's father saw the video for the first time in the courtroom.
It was horrible. It was horrible seeing that in the description and knowing that he was responsible for my daughter's last breath.
And on February 26, 2019, the jury agreed. Liam McItasney was found guilty of felony murder, robbery, and a series of other charges. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. It was a bittersweet moment for prosecutors.
Looking over my shoulder after the verdict, seeing Michael Stern and him finally getting some justice, even without that final layer of closure, was big for us.
Since we never could give him back his daughter, obviously, or give him a body to bury, the only thing I think we could as a team do is to convict Liam.
In 2019, Sarah Stern would have turned 21, and family and friends gathered on the Belmar Bridge to remember her. Sarah's father, Michael Stern.
We do have justice for Sarah. That's a good thing. I miss Sarah, but this is a nice tribute to her.
The saying, "Time heals all wounds," wasn't written by a father who lost his only child. For Michael Stern, the best he can do is to try to keep moving forward one day at a time.
Some nights I sleep, some nights I just can't sleep. I have nightmares thinking about what happened to Sarah. Just never ends. And I miss her.
Michael Stern and Neptune High School are raising money to endow the Sarah Lee Stern Scholarship. The award will be given every year to a graduating student pursuing an education in media or the arts. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.